And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is March 19th, 78th day of the year. 287 days remain till this year's over with. On this day in history in 1277, the Byzantine-Venetian Treaty of 1277 was concluded. It stipulated a two-year truce in renewing Venetian commercial privileges in the Byzantine Empire. At one point in time, Venice was quite the power. 1279, a Mongol victory at the Battle of Yamen ends the Song Dynasty in China. 1284, the Statute of Rhuddlan incorporates the Principality of Wales into England. 1452, Frederick III of Habsburg is the last Holy Roman Emperor, crowned by medieval tradition in Rome by Pope Nicholas V. 1563, the Edict of Amboise is assigned, ends the first phase of the French Wars of Religion and grants certain freedom to the Huguenots. 1649, the House of Commons of England passes an act abolishing the House of Lords, declares it useless and dangerous to the people of England. Of course, had the members of the House of Commons been titled individuals, they would have had a totally different attitude. 1687, explorer Robert Chevalier de La Salle, searching for the mouth of the Mississippi River, is murdered by his own men. It'll teach you to turn your back on folks. 1808, Charles IV, King of Spain, abdicates after riots and a revolt at the Winter Palace, Aranjuez. His son, Ferdinand VII, takes the throne. 1812, the Cortes of Cadiz promulgates the Spanish Constitution of 1812. 1831, the first documented bank heist in U.S. history. Burglars stole $245,000 in 1831 values from the Citibank, now Citibank on Wall Street. Most of that money was recovered. 1853, the Taiping Reform Movement occupies and makes Nanjing its capital until 1864. 1861, the first Taranaki War ends in New Zealand. 1863, the SS Georgiana, said to have been the most powerful Confederate cruiser, is destroyed on her maiden voyage with the cargo and munitions, medicine, and merchandise that was valued at over $1 million in 1863 dollars. 1865, American Civil War, the Battle of Bentonville begins. By the end of the battle, 2 days later, Confederate forces had retreated from Four Oaks in North Carolina. 1885, Louis Riel declares a provisional government in Saskatchewan, begins the Northwest Rebellion. 1895, Auguste and Louis Lumiere record their first footage using their newly patented cinematograph. 1918, U.S. Congress establishes time zones and approves daylight savings time. That's so the city people have more time to play. 1920, U.S. Senate rejects the Treaty of Versailles for the second time. First time was November 19, 1919. 1921, Irish War of Independence. One of the biggest engagements of the war takes place at Crossbury in County Cork. About 100 Irish Republican Army volunteers escape an attempt by over 1,300 British soldiers. Okay, as I was saying, there were 1,300 British soldiers trying to encircle 100 Irish Republican Army volunteers at Crossbury in County Cork. 1931, Governor Fred Balzar signs a bill legalizing gambling in Nevada. 1932, the Sydney Harbor Bridge is open. 1943, Frank Nitti, the Chicago outfit boss who took over after Al Capone, got sent up, commit suicide at the Chicago Central Rail Yard. 1944, World War II. German Army occupies Hungary. 1945, off the coast of Japan, a dive bomber hits the aircraft carrier USS Franklin. Kills 724 of her crew. Badly damaged, the ship's able to return to the U.S. under her own power. Also in 1945, Adolf Hitler issues his Nero Decree, ordering all industries, military installations, shops, transportation facilities, and communications facilities in Germany to be destroyed. Most folks didn't pay a whole lot of attention to that. It was issued March 19th, 1945. It was officially titled a decree concerning demolitions in the Reich territory. The decree was deliberately disobeyed by Albert Speer, who had worked so hard to build up the Reich. 1946, French Guinea, Guadeloupe, Martinique, and Réunion become overseas departments of France. 1958, the Monarch Underwear Company fire leaves 24 dead and 15 injured. And a lot of folks had to change their underwear after it was over. 1962, the Algerian War of Independence ends. 1964, over 500,000 Brazilians attend the March of the Family with God for Liberty in protest to the government of João Goulart and against communism. 1965, the wreck of the SS Georgiana, valued at over $50 million and said to have been the most powerful Confederate cruiser, is discovered by a teenage diver and pioneer underwater archaeologist named E. Lee Spence. And he discovered it exactly 102 years after it sank. 1969, the 385-meter tall, that's 1,263 feet, TV-mast at Emily Moore Transmitting Station in the UK collapses due to ice. 1979, the U.S. House of Representatives began broadcasting its day-to-day business via cable television network C-SPAN. 1982, it was thought that C-SPAN would keep them from posturing and making fools of themselves. We drastically underestimated their ability to do that. 1982, Falklands War. Argentine forces land on South Georgia Island, precipitating war with the UK. 1989, the Egyptian flag is raised at Taba, marking the end of Israeli occupation since the Six Days War in 1967 and the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty in 1979. 1990, the ethnic clashes of Targu Mereis begins 4 days after the anniversary of the revolutions of 1848 in the Austrian Empire. 1998, an Ariana Afghan Airlines Boeing 727 crashes on approach to Kabul International Airport, kills off 45 people on board. 2002, Zimbabwe suspended from the Commonwealth on charges of human rights abuses and electoral fraud. That follows a turbulent presidential election. 2004, the Catalina Affair. Swedish DC-3 shot down by Soviet MiG-15 in 1952 over the Baltic Sea is finally recovered after years of trying. 2004, March 19th shooting incident. The Republic of China, that's Taiwan. President Chen Shui-bian is shot just before the country's presidential election on March 20th. 2008, GRB 080319B, a cosmic burst that is the furthest object visible to the naked eye is briefly observed. 2011, Libyan Civil War. After the failure of Muammar Gaddafi's forces to take Benghazi, the French Air Force launches Operation Harmattan, beginning foreign military intervention in Libya. 2013, series of bombings and shootings kills at least 98 people and injures 240 others across Iraq. 2016, Flighted by Flight 981 crashes while attempting to land at Rostov-on-Don International Airport. All 62 people on board are killed. 2016, an explosion occurs at Taksim Square in Istanbul, Turkey. Kills 5, injures 36. And in 2018, the last male northern white rhinoceros, Sudan, dies, ensuring a chance of extinction for the species. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays observances, Christian observances, Alcman of Derby, St. Joseph and the Western Christianity, St. Joseph's Day in Roman Catholicism and Anglican Communion, Fallies, celebrated on the week leading to March 19th in Valencia, Father's Day in Spain, Portugal, Italy, Honduras, and Bolivia, Return of the Swallow. That's an annual observance of the Swallow's return to Mission San Juan Capistrano, California. And earliest day on which Maundy Thursday can fall, April 22nd, the latest, celebrated on Thursday before Easter in Christianity. Mina Kant's birthday and a day of equality in Finland. Kasubian Unity Day in Poland. And let's see what else we might have. In 1644, 200 members of the Peking imperial family and court commit suicide in loyalty to the emperor. I ain't got that much loyalty to nobody. In 2003, airstrikes by an American and British-led coalition signaled the beginning of the invasion of Iraq. This was done without United Nations support and defiance of world opinion. Let's see what else we might have here. Okay, this is also National Backyard Day. National Let's Laugh Day. National Certified Nurses Day. National Poultry Day. And National Chocolate Caramel Day. Which, whoever came up with all this needs to have a day for their certification. In 1227, Count Ugolino of Segna elected Pope Gregory the Ninth. In 1524, Giovanni de Varanzano, Florentine explorer in the service of King Francis I of France, lands in the area of the Carolinas. 1540, Count of Holland names Amsterdam Sheriff John Ubrechts a heretic. In 1571, Spanish troops occupy Manila. 1628, Massachusetts Bay Colony is formally granted land by England. 1682, an assembly of the French clergy issues an interesting declaration. States, among other things, the power of the king is not subject to papal authority. 1748, the Naturalization Act is passed. Granted Jews the right to colonize North American colonies. 1812, the first Spanish constitution is enacted, one of the earliest constitutions ever promulgated. 1822, Boston is incorporated as a city. Bad mistake. 1866, the immigrant ship Monarch of the Seas sinks in Liverpool. 738 would-be immigrants die. 1882, the first stone was laid for the Sagrada Familia Basilica in Barcelona, in Spain, designed by Antoni Gaudi, the architect. 1883, Jan Metzeliger invents the first machine to manufacture entire shoes. 1895, the Los Angeles Railway is established to provide streetcar service. 1896, thinking about going back to school, the CDC said today, school distancing guidelines have been reduced to 3 feet, but they want everybody to wear a mask. My school, if we'd have shown up wearing masks, teachers would have run. 1915, Pluto's photographed for the first time, although nobody knew what it was. 1917, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds an 8-hour workday for railroad employees. 1918, S. Potter becomes the first U.S. pilot to shoot down a German seaplane. 1925, Angelo Giuseppe Roncalli, who would become eventually Pope John XXIII, becomes a bishop on this date. Appointed as his apostolic visitor to Bulgaria. 1927, bloody battles break out between communists and Nazis in Berlin. 1937, Pope Pius XI published an encyclical Divini Redemptoris against communism. He was the 259th pope. 1940, there was a failed British air raid on the German base at Sylt. 1942, on this date, FDR orders men between 45 and 64 to register for non-military duty. 1943, the British 8th Army opens an assault on Marith Line in Tunisia. 1943, in their third match, Jake LaMotta defeats Jimmy Reeves for the middleweight boxing championship by knocking him out in the sixth round. 1945, the British 36th Division conquers Mogok. It was a ruby mine was right there where the battle took place. 1945, U.S. Task Force 58 attacks ships near Kobe. 1947, General Ulissimo Chiang Kai-shek conquers Jinan. 1949, the first museum devoted exclusively to atomic energy was opened in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. 1951, a book that I came to hate since it was a side reading was Herman Wouk's novel, The Kane Mutiny. Got the Pulitzer Prize in 1952. Okay, 1954 on this date was the first color telecast of a prize fight. It was between Girardello and Troy, and it was in the Madison Square Garden in New York City. Alrighty. Well, see if there's anything else of major interest. I guess we'll end up with 1964 on this date. Sean Connery began his first day of shooting on the James Bond film Goldfinger. Alrighty. Well, we've been talking about strange creatures. Creatures of the night, I like to call them. And of course, there are more than just a few. We talked about the, started talking about the Yeti, which is the Himalayan version of what we call Bigfoot in this country. In terms of the relatively modern era, it was in the 1800s that matters became particularly intriguing. In the early 1830s, an expedition was launched to the Himalayas by a mountain climber by the name of Hodson. I talked about him for a few minutes yesterday. And he said his shooters became alarmed in the Kochar by the appearance of a wild man. Well, since he didn't see it, he doubted their existence. They were, after all, superstitious natives. Now, none of the team expected to encounter giant hair-covered hominids on the Himalayas, but that's what they encountered. And particularly baffling to these explorers was the fact the creatures they saw walked solely on their hind limbs. They didn't walk like apes or anything else. Just 1 year before the turn of the century, Lawrence Waddell's book, Among the Himalayas, was published. And in that book, he described how a number of Tibetans had told him of huge, hairy, ape-like animals that walked like people and lived up in the mountains. Now, he didn't put little faith in the accounts, despite having personally come across some of those large footprints in the snow. But the reports from Hodson's expedition, coupled with that of Waddell, provoked a lot of interest. But it wasn't until the 1920s that things really got rolling. The Everest Reconnaissance Expedition was launched in 1921 under the leadership of Lieutenant Colonel Charles Howard Berry of the British military. And nobody on that expedition anticipated coming across anything unusual, but that's exactly what they found in the form of huge human-like footprints, thousands of feet up on the snow-covered mountainsides. The word of these strange discoveries began to spread, and a newspaper reporter named Henry Newman decided to look into the matter himself. And it didn't take a long period of time before Newman had collected a respectively sized body material on the legendary mountain roamer, which he famously dubbed the Abominable Snowman. Somewhat of a mistaken distortion of the term used by the locals, Meta, meaning filthy. Without doubt, it was the decade of the 50s that really got the imagination of the media and the scientific community rolling. Britain's media was hot on the trail of the creature, as were respected mountaineers such as Sir Edmund Hillary and Eric Shipton. Although interest in and reports of the Yeti dipped in subsequent years, the controversy fired up again in 2014 when a professor of genetics at Oxford University revealed his findings that suggested that the Yeti was actually nothing stranger than a bear. Possibly one that was part polar bear and part brown bear. Now, these brilliant theories all come from ivory tower researchers who do not leave their air-conditioned offices to go roaming among the lesser mortals and in the back and beyond. Within the field of cryptozoology, though, the most likely candidate for the Yeti is actually the Gigantopithecus, a truly gigantic ape that science tells us has been extinct for tens of thousands of years. And that the immense beast dwelled in the very areas where the Yeti is seen to this day suggests a distinct but surprising possibility Gigantopithecus may still be with us. And if you don't think things can survive long past their sell-by date, go tell the coelacanth he doesn't exist. It was supposed to have been extinct 65 million years ago. It was caught in 1939 by a fisherman off the coast of Africa, and there's been several caught since then. Well, from the Yeti, let's turn to the Yowie. Now, creatures of a Bigfoot-like appearance are not just exclusive to the U.S., the Himalayas, and the wilds of South Africa, Russia, or China. Australia is the domain of the huge apish Yowie. In the same way, the Native Americans have had long history reports about Sasquatch, particularly so in the Pacific Northwest. Australia's Aboriginal people have long told of the existence of the towering Yowie. And there's another parallel between the North American Bigfoot and the Yowie of Australia. A careful study of old newspapers shows that the Yowie, like the Bigfoot, was long known before the term Bigfoot was created back in the 1950s. Now, many of the sightings of the Yowie occur in and around the vast Blue Mountains that dominate the city of Sydney in what's termed the Sydney Basin. A first-hand report from February 1842 offers a graphic description of the beast. It was published as a letter in the pages of the Australian to that document, this being, they describe, as resembling a man of nearly the same height, with long white hair hanging down from the head over the features. The arms is extraordinarily long, furnished at the extremities with great talons, and the feet turned backwards so that on flying from man, the imprint of the foot appears as if the being had traveled in the opposite direction. Altogether, they describe it as a hideous monster of an unearthly character and ape-like appearance. And on December 9, 1882, a first-hand account surfaced from a Mr. H. J. McCooey. He told the Australian Town and County Journal newspaper that a few days before, he saw one of these strange creatures. And I should think that if it was standing upright, it'd be nearly 5 feet high. It was tailless and covered with long black hair, which was of a dirty red or snuff color about the throat and breast. Its eyes were small and restless, partly hidden by matted hair that covered its head. He said, I threw a stone at the creature and it turned and ran. But make no mistake, the sightings of the Australian Yowie are not limited to the past. In early 1993, a man named Neil Frost, who lived in the Blue Mountains area, encountered in the shadows of his backyard an animal that he estimated weighed close to 300 pounds, walked on two legs, and had a thick coat of hair and bright red eyes. Now, when the creature realized that Frost had seen it, it shot away at high speed and vanished into the shadows. Despite attempts on the part of Frost and a friend, Ian Price, to track the creature down on several occasions, the Yowie managed to skillfully evade him, just like its American cousin Bigfoot does so very often. And bringing matters even further up to date, midway through June of 2013, Australia's Northern Star newspaper reported a recent encounter. Journalist Jamie Brown wrote, the latest sighting took place recently just north of Beck's Hill when a Lismore resident music videographer spied the classic creature crossing a moonlit bungalow road. The witness, who didn't want his name known for fear of reprisal, said he was driving back home from a night of filming at Eltham and just turned onto the bungalow road heading for Lismore when he spied a creature jumping a barbed wire paddock fence before briefly pausing at the edge of the road. As the creature moved across the two lanes of bitumen, raising his arms to shield its eyes from the bright high beam of the approaching car, and the witness said, I would have seen it for between 20 and 30 seconds. It was really moving at the time. It jumped the fence with no problem. All I can remember was seeing this large black object with a solid bill, lanky legs, long lanky arms. It wasn't wearing any clothes, like a human. So, clearly, the Yowie lives on. Then, let's talk about a story that came out of Russia's Caucasus Mountains. It was in 1964. Professor Boris Porchnev uncovered what was described to him by the villagers of Takhina as the bones of a female Almasti, Russia's very own Bigfoot. Brad Steiger says that according to Porchnev, a preliminary investigation of the skeleton determined that its skeletal structure was different from that of a female member of Homo sapien. And it was the discovery that became inextricably linked to a story that dated back to the 1800s, specifically in the mid-1860s. There was a store in the area that a noble by the name of Edgy Ganaba had an estate in Takhina, returned to the village one day with something remarkable in tow. It was a strange, savage-looking thing of primitive proportions. Clearly, in some aspects, it did look at least human, but as to whether it was actually Homo sapien is a very different matter entirely. Reportedly, the creature, and it was a female, was given to Ganaba by a vassal of one Prince D.M. Akba, keen and expert hunter and ruler of the Zadan region, who took the wild woman alive while out in the woods. Well, according to the report, Ganaba wasted no time building a secure enclosure, one in which the creature, soon named Zana, could be housed. Now, initially, there were certainly understandable concerns that Zana might prove to be hostile and downright murderous, and that's why they had to confine her. And for a while, at least, the actions of Ganaba were seen as making a great deal of sense. Zana was definitely unstable, lived in a hole she dug in the enclosure and ate like a wild animal. But over the course of a couple of years, reports reveal that things began to change. Eventually, the people of Takhina came to accept that Zana was no longer the threat they had feared she might originally have been. And as a result, she was given a significant amount of freedom to wander around the village and interact with the people. Zana was, by all accounts, a quick learner and quite intelligent. She helped around the village, hauled sacks of grain, prepared firewood, and seemed to enjoy her daily task as well. Well, it's clear from the descriptions that Zana was no normal woman. Her immense body was covered in dark hair. She didn't want to wear clothes, even in the freezing temperatures of the Caucasus Mountains, and she couldn't speak a word. Of her physical appearance, Igor Bortsev reported her face was terrifying, broad with high cheekbones, flat nose, turned-out nostrils, muzzle-like jaws, wide mouth with large teeth, low forehead, and eyes of a reddish tinge. But the most frightening feature was her expression, which was purely animal, not human. Sometimes she'd give a spontaneous laugh, baring those big white teeth of hers. The latter were so strong, she easily cracked the hardest walnuts. Well, despite repeated attempts to try and have Zana learn to speak the local Russian dialect, it all came to nothing. Mumble and squeal was just about all that Zana could manage, depending on her mood and demeanor. But she was a creature obsessed with cleanliness, never missing a day of bathing in the cold waters of a local spring. And she had another obsession that was commented on. And that obsession had to do with rocks. She enjoyed chipping away at them, putting them into various designs and piles, as if doing so held some form of significance to her. Well, the most controversial claim made about Zana was that she gave birth to no fewer than 5 children. The fathers were reportedly not male Amasti, but the men of Takhina. Brad Steiger made a valuable observation about this particular claim. If it's true, the implications of Zana having bred with men of the village are really quite staggering. The wild woman did truly conceive with human males, and she was not an ape by any stretch of the imagination. When related to this aspect of the story is a rumor that 4 of the children died, and the solitary survivor fled to the vast mountains from which its mother originated. It's said that Zana lived until the 1880s when she passed away. Her life was celebrated by the people of Takhina, who had come to embrace her as one of their very own, which does raise quite a number of questions. And since they did find in 1964 the skeleton I remarked on, it would seem that there's some truth to that story. Well, let's turn to the Philippines. For centuries, the people of the Philippines have talked about a violent, malevolent monster that's provoked terror and mayhem and has been responsible for an untold number of savage, violent deaths. It goes by the name of the Aswang. It's also known as the Tik-Tik and the Suk-Suk due to the strange clicking noise it makes when it's about to launch an attack on its prey. And its prey is almost exclusively members of the human race. And although reports of the Aswang can be found all across the Philippines, the monster is most often seen on Mindanao, second largest island in the Philippines, and on the Visayas Islands, and particularly so on the islands of Bohol and Negros. While outsiders might take the view the Aswang is merely a beast of legend and folklore, the people of the Philippines have a very different opinion. To them, this monster is real. And it's a gruesome, marauding thing to be sure. According to local lore, most Aswang are female. Now, they're not the beautiful, seductive type that one might expect to see in a gothic-style vampire movie. They just might be your worst nightmare. They're scrawny, emaciated things with gray mottled skin, milk-white eyes that are as cold-looking as they're emotion-free. Sores and boils are said to cover their bodies. They give off the stench of rotting meat, and they're typically garbed in ragged, torn clothing. Well, despite their rotted appearance and odor, the Aswangs are said to be highly athletic, having the ability to run at phenomenal speeds and leap to heights of 15 feet or more as they chase their terrified soon-to-be victims. Indeed, the Aswang live exclusively on two things, human blood and human meat. No wonder the zombie vampire legends surround the Aswangs. And frankly, they've taken quite a firm hold. Worse still, the Aswang has a particular taste for the flesh of newborn babies and children. They'll do the utmost to seek out the young and the vulnerable, silently and stealthily breaking into homes in the middle of the night and slaughtering and taking away the corpses of those that they have killed. And although the Aswangs will devour just about every part of the human body, they're most partial to the liver and the heart, which are seen as definitive delicacies to these creatures. When an Aswang is unable to seek out a taste of human, he or she will resort to prowling the cemeteries and graveyards, clawing through the dirt and digging up the recently buried. Also mirroring the lore surrounding zombies and vampires, if a person is attacked and bitten by an Aswang but manages to escape, it's said he or she will soon become an Aswang themselves. Now, infection takes no time at all to set in, and the process of mutation from human to monster is unstoppable. And there's no cure for the deadly infection that the Aswang delivers, and which quickly surges through the bloodstream. As the infection spreads, the victim develops a craving for blood and human flesh, and violent mood swings begin. The person is affected by sudden bouts of rage. It's only a matter of time before the infected lose all their humanity and become fearsome, cannibalistic monsters. It's not just vampires and zombies the Aswangs resemble. Like the classic werewolf of folklore history in Hollywood, the Aswang can shapeshift into multiple animal-based forms, including a huge black dog with glowing eyes, a bipedal wolf, and a huge and violent pig. So if you meet a pig that has glowing red eyes and will chase a stick when you throw it, you may be dealing with an Aswang that can't figure out what animal form he wants to take. Well, you know, practically everybody's heard about Bigfoot and Mothman. Along with the likes of the Loch Ness Monster and the Abominable Snowman, they're two of the world's most famous monsters. What do you get when you combine the Bigfoot and Mothman? Well, what you get is Batsquatch, a terrifying, malevolent, hair-covered humanoid that sports a pair of huge gargoyle-like wings. And it was a diabolical beast like this encountered by a young man On the night of Saturday, April 16, 1994, he was southeast of Buckley, Washington, and with Mount Rainier in the background. It was quite an interesting location. Now, Mount Rainier has another strange and now famous aerial mystery attached to it. It was over these mountains on June 24, 1947, that Kenneth Arnold encountered a squadron of strange flying vehicles that, when the media got the story, became famously known as flying saucers. Well, turning from our UFO connection back to Bat Squatch, the man who became the unfortunate witness to this terrible beast was Brian Canfield, who at the time in question was driving his truck to Camp 1, a settlement in the area that's situated near Lake Kapuskasing. Now, all was normal until his headlights began to fade out. That was bad enough, but not the worst that happened. In moments, his entire engine quit, and the vehicle silently coasted to a stop at the side of the road. So you're sitting on a lonely stretch of Washington Road in the backwoods about 9:30 in the evening. And while he's trying to digest that, an infernal monstrosity loomed into view. He said he could only look on, terror-stricken, as a large, dark-colored humanoid descended from the black skies. He said it did so in a curious semi-gliding, semi-flying fashion. Finally came to rest right in front of his truck. He said he couldn't move. He was that terrified. All he could do was grip the steering wheel and stare in stark terror at the creature standing in front of him. And certainly the creature was shocking looking, to say the least. The winged, hair-covered monster was about 9 feet in height, and the wings spanned the entire road. This point, despite his terror, he finally got a good look at the creature. Its fur was actually a dark blue rather than what he thought was going to be black or brown. Its eyes shone yellow, and its white fangs protruded menacingly from its werewolf-like visage. For a moment, at least a couple of minutes, both man and monster just stood and stared at each other, neither made any kind of move. And finally, the creature, without warning, flapped its wings and took to the skies once again, maybe demonstrating the creature's supernatural powers. When the creature disappeared into the ether, Canfield's vehicle returned to normal. Both its headlight and engine began to work normally. He raced back to the house he shared with his parents, charged in and spluttered and gasped his way through his story. His mother, realizing this was no prank, decided the best thing they could do would be get back out there and try to figure things out. Maybe luckily, Bat Squatch was nowhere to be seen. And as far as being determined, it hadn't been seen since that time. Of course, if it did appear to someone who was not safely in a vehicle, they may not be able to tell the story. Well, I've had a lot of people talk to me about going to clubs in Juarez, and a lot of them talk about the donkey lady, and I don't think the donkey lady I'm going to talk about is the one they mean. Her name might sound comical, but there's nothing to laugh about when it comes to this truly diabolical, infernal entity that haunts various parts of the Texas city of San Antonio. Indeed, she, or more correctly, it, has for decades provoked both fear and mayhem in the city's residents. Which is hardly surprising when you hear the story. Now, the story of this monster woman dates back to the 1800s, specifically to the vicinity of near the city called Elm Creek. And it was on Elm Creek, according to legend, the woman lived with her husband and two children. And they made a bare living from farming. In fact, it was barely a living that ensured the family lived in poverty and at near starvation levels. Now, as fate would have it, on one particular day, a man on horseback appeared near the family's property. He was a young man, son of a rich landowner in the area, and somebody with a cruel propensity for torturing animals. And when he saw the family's solitary mule standing all alone in a particular field, he decided to embark on a bit of what he called fun. He proceeded to violently beat the poor defenseless animal. It was only the loud cries emitted by the mule that saved its life. The owners came running to see what was going on, and they were confronted by the man who were attacking the mule. Not surprisingly, they tried to defend their property, which he did by throwing rocks at him, some of which were right on target. He cursed both husband and wife, swearing to get even with them. And it was a curse that soon came tragically to life. Later that night, a posse led by the man himself stealthily kept up on the family house and set it on fire. In moments, the house was engulfed in flame and all four occupants were terrorized. The owner of the house tried to distract the group so his wife and children could escape and couldn't do it. He was shot and killed as children were burned alive. The wife was terribly burned. Her fingers were burned down to charred stumps. Her entire body was blackened. Her face was dreadfully disfigured. To the extent, her face appeared to have been semi-melted and took on elongated donkey-like proportions. That's why they called her Donkey Woman. Crazed, in agony, and hideously burned, she fled the house and threw herself under the waters below nearby Elm Creek Bridge. She vanished under the waters. The farmhouse continued to burn. Never seen again. Or was she? On more than a few occasions, and right up to modern times, people crossing the bridge, whether walking or in vehicles, have heard terrible shrieks coming from the waters below and from within the surrounding woods. A vile, wailing she-monster with long, lank hair, dressed in rags with her skin peeling off, reportedly jumped onto the cars of terrified drivers. Others have seen the beast woman walking through the waters, insanely seeking revenge on the people that made her life a misery and had killed her family. One Texas cryptid hunter discussed the affair of the donkey lady. He said what interests him more than whether or not the stories are true is what people are still seeing on and near Elm Creek Bridge. Could there have been a flesh-and-blood creature responsible for these legends? And if that was the case, what was that creature? Many have screwed up their courage and ventured under the bridge to examine the muddy bank for clues, and some have come back with photos of hoof-like tracks. So should this be looked at as proof that the donkey lady exists? I mean, this is Texas, after all, and finding the tracks of a horse or a mule anywhere in the state, even under the Donkey Lady Bridge, wouldn't be all that unusual. However, whatever haunts this bridge and the surrounding woods is still seen on occasion and is heard more often than that to this very day. Now, what I have a problem with is the fact that the young man who set fire to that house and destroyed that family apparently paid no penalty. Well, from the donkey lady, let's turn to the goat man. In the very early hours of one particular morning in the hot and sticky summer of 1969, six petrified residents of the Texas city of Fort Worth raced for the safety of their local police station. And when they got there, they told a controversial and amazing story. John Reichardt, his wife, and two other couples were parked at Lake Worth. And at the stroke of midnight, a truly vile and monstrous-looking creature came storming out of the thick branches of a large nearby tree. Reportedly covered in a coat that seemed to be comprised of both scales and fur, it slammed with a crashing bang onto the hood of the Reichardt's car. He would try to grab hold of the not-surprisingly terrified Mrs. Reichardt before it raced off into the pitch-black night. The solitary evidence of its dark, foreboding presence was a deep foot-and-a-half-long scratch on the side of the Reichardt's vehicle. And while this specific event rapidly and unsurprisingly generated deep media interest and was actually taken seriously by the Fort Worth police, as prime evidence of this, no fewer than four police cars quickly headed to the scene of the Reichardt's encounter. And it was most certainly not the first occasion upon which Fort Worth officialdom had become the recipient of ominous accounts of diabolical beast roaming around Lake Worth. Indeed, until the Reichardt story hit the newspapers, a little-known fact that for approximately 2 months, the police had been clandestinely investigating reports of a distinctly weird beast that was said to be spooking the locals on a disturbingly regular basis. Now, some of the officers concluded at least some of the sightings might have been the work of local kids running around in ape costumes. Others weren't so sure that fakery was a dominating factor, and they actually believed the Reichardt story. Now, Patrolman James McGee conceded that the report John Reichardt filed with the Fort Worth Constabulary was treated very seriously, as a result of which those folks are really scared. Of course, the Dallas-Fort Worth media loved the story and did their utmost to promote it just about as much as was humanly possible. Notably, one particular feature that appeared in the pages of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram was written by acclaimed author Jim Mars. He's a man well known for his books on 9/11, the JFK assassination, and countless other conspiracies and cover-ups. The headline that was seen on the front page of the Star-Telegram was a news editor's absolute dream. Fishy man, goat, terrifies couples parked at Lake Worth. Now, beyond any shadow of a doubt, this particular story that made the goat man both infamous and even feared among the residents of Lake Worth, it wouldn't be long at all before the monster's ugly form surfaced once again. In fact, it was almost 24 hours to the minute. Midnight was looming around the corner, and the creatures reported a scene racing across a stretch of road close to the Lake Worth Nature Center. Interestingly, the main witness, one Jack Harris of Fort Worth, stated when he attempted to take a picture of the monster, the flash on his camera failed to work. A phenomena that is curiously and eerily prevalent in mystery animal reports and encounters. I ran into that same situation at I was in the Birdcage Saloon in Tombstone. I had a brand new camera that had worked beautifully up to that point. I went into the stage area, thought I saw movement in the box up above the stage, took a photograph, and the camera refused to work. It would not do anything. So when I went outside, before I could say anything to anybody, the camera on its own took a picture. And when I looked at that picture, there sitting in the box was a misty figure. Now, at the time that picture was taken, I was not near the stage. I was not pointing the camera at the box. That was the picture I had tried to take before. Well, getting back to the goat man, this creature, whatever its ultimate nature and origin, was shortly thereafter seen to charge across the landscape of a nearby bluff with three dozen hyped-up locals in hot pursuit. Goatman wasn't about to become the victim of some crazed posse. He had an unforeseen ace up his sleeve. Towering over the crowd at approximately 10 yards, the Goatman hurled a huge tire at the group that resulted in the throng scattering wildly in all directions. One of those present, a man named Jack Harris of Fort Worth, said everybody jumped back into their cars and got out of there as quickly as they could. The goat man was the victor of that encounter. But the story wasn't over yet. More accounts surfaced, with some witnesses stating the creature had dark fur or hair over its body. Others maintained its coat was overwhelmingly white in color. Then there were disturbing tales of horrific mutilations of animals in the area, dog, cats, and more, most of which surfaced amid theories the goat man had made a home, or more likely a lair for himself, in a relatively small piece of land called Greer Island. Greer Island is connected to the mainland by a small walkway. Now, at this point, the story was on the verge of spinning wildly out of control. Helmut Neumer, who was an employee of the Fort Worth Museum of Science and History, offered the theory that the goat man was probably nothing but a pet bobcat that somebody had clandestinely released onto Lake Worth Park. The one that presumably took a great deal of pleasure in jumping onto people's cars at midnight. Now, how the bobcat was able to change its colors from brown to white and throw a large tire through the air, for a distance it was estimated to be no less than 500 feet, was not addressed in this theory. Of course, it's not impossible that numerous theories might indeed have provided answers to the questions that pertain to at least some of the sightings, but it most assuredly couldn't explain the truly surreal photo taken by a man named Alan Plaster. He was a local dress shop owner. His picture showed a giant white-hued beast with a torso that appeared to be constructed out of dozens of cotton balls, and on top of which sat a tiny head. And while stories and friend-of-a-friend tales suggested Fort Worth police had found evidence that some of the sightings were the work of costumed hoaxers, this was an issue that to this day remains murky and not fully resolved. The legend of the Goat Man still lives on at Lake Worth. The question becomes, is it ever going to be solved? All right, I had to take time out to talk about an issue with the assistant to an elected official. Unfortunately, elected officials, especially in this area, seem to believe they become royalty when they get elected. And just like Queen Pelosi. Well, I got news for the world. That is not the case. Our system is based on the fact that all men are created equal. Whether you believe it or not, becoming elected doesn't make you royalty. And what they've done is forced me in the position of having to run for office. And if I get elected, oh heaven help these people who have screwed the disabled veterans. All right, we've been talking about, we talked about Goat Man at Lake Worth. Well, how about Goat Man of White Rock Lake? That's the most terrifying resident of White Rock Lake in Dallas, Texas. According to the story, on several occasions in the 70s and 80s, a distinctly odd creature was seen wandering in and out of the trees after sunset around that lake. Man-like in form, about 7 feet high, goat-style protrusions sticking out of its head and hooves instead of feet. In fact, it looked pretty much like a fabled satyr of the Greek and Roman legends. And a number of other cultures have had an awareness of such strange creatures lurking around. There was the demon goat man Azazel, the goat beast in the mountains that was feared by the herdsmen of Parnassus. And there was the Greek god Pan, who pretty much fit that description. Now, the deity of the woods and lakes and flocks and shepherds, Pan dealt in grottos and roamed mountains and valleys, loved music and was universally feared. In ancient times, any form of overwhelming dread without a discernible cause was often described in the actions and presence of Pan, and actually became known as a panic terror. Pan came to be considered a symbol of the universe and the personification of nature. It was almost certainly the inspiration for the Latin divinities Sylvanus and Faunus. Fascinating account that deserves mention was regarding an individual who saw the goat man up close and personal in August 2001. And this was also at White Rock Lake. The young lady in question, named Sandy Grace, had been jogging around the lake on a 9 mile long trail when about 2 in the afternoon, out of the trees stepped the strangest looking thing she'd ever seen. Large, covered in thin, coarse brown hair, and with two large horn like protrusions sticking out of its head. This half man, half beast strode in her direction with a malevolent sneer and grin on its face. Bizarrely, when it got within about 15 feet of her, crouched down onto all four limbs and vanished in a flash of light. Now, she was positive it hadn't been a hallucination, and equally sure that such a thing couldn't live within the confines of White Rock Lake, or actually, it'd be unusual to find it living on the face of the planet. But interestingly, less than a minute before that, she'd been overcome by an intense feeling of fear, for no particular reason she could understand. Now, before or since, she had never suffered from panic attacks, but figured this was probably the best way to describe how she felt. Could also have been a classic description of an encounter with Pan, the god of the woods, from centuries ago. Well, we come to the end of tonight's show, and we will be back Monday. And once again, we'll be talking about The Strange and the Unusual. You're listening to Ken Hodnell. This is the Ken Hodnell Show, saying have a truly great evening.